My name is Mark Glasick, and I am a policy analyst with Community Health Councils in South Los Angeles. I'll be talking about health and community-based planning in the creation of transit-oriented districts in South LA. I have no relationships to disclose. Our co-authors are from the University of Southern California School of Public Policy, and also my current and former colleagues at Community Health Councils. Today I'm going to talk about community-based planning processes and the integration of urban planning tools, how to formulate innovative policy solutions alongside community members, and also how to use assessment data in this policy formation. A little bit about Community Health Councils before I start. We were established in 1992. Our mission is to promote social justice and achieve equity in community and environmental resources for underserved communities. We are based in the Crenshaw District of South Los Angeles, and for the past 10 years under the REACH US, REACH 2010, and currently REACH Demonstration Grant, we have convened the African Americans Building a Legacy of Health Consortium, which I'll talk about shortly. All of our work is done through the Model for Social Change. It's an ambitious sounding model, but it's kind of integrated into everything that we do. The community identifies a catalyst for us to work on, and then from there we work on building coalitions to address issues. Thereafter, assessing the community through CBPR approaches, and then working to develop policy interventions and evaluating the policies thereafter. We hope that the outcomes of this model will lead to, among other things, leadership, collaboration, and increased community capacity to develop policies that affect the built environment and the places where we live, work, and play. And hopefully all of this leads to health equity, which I'm sure is our shared goal in this room. A little bit about the South LA context. South LA, including the unincorporated areas in cities like Hawthorne, Compton, and Vernon, encompasses 100 square miles and about 1.3 million people. Residential density varies from 13,000 people to 18,000 people per square mile, which is on par with some areas of metropolitan Manhattan. It's a historic and unique intersection of race, ethnicity, and culture. It's a very historic neighborhood. Historic area. It contains 45% of LA County's African American population, and it is also home to the Metro Blue Line, which is the busiest and most dangerous light rail in the country. The Blue Line connects downtown Los Angeles with Long Beach. This is a map of the South Los Angeles area. The area outlined in red is the City of Los Angeles portion of South Los Angeles. To the west, you'll see West Los Angeles, communities like Marina Del Rey and Santa Monica. To the east, you'll see cities like Vernon, Huntington Park, and downtown Los Angeles. Now, as we travel from the right side of the screen to the left side of the screen, life expectancy will jump 8 years. So within LA County, there are significant disparities that we see, and this is part of the project that we undertook to address some of those disparities. Our understanding of the equity environment in South Los Angeles was evaluated with the South LA Health Equity Scorecard, which examined 50 socioeconomic and environmental factors that determine health outcomes. For the purpose of this presentation, I'll be focusing on the physical environment resource, the physical activity resource environment, and the nutrition resource environment. The basic conclusion, what we found, is that South LA is more of a condition than a place, and I think that is backed up by the wonderful California Endowment posters that we've seen on the sides of the buildings. Racial composition of South Los Angeles, it's largely Latino and African American. Comparing this to West Los Angeles, it's significantly different. West Los Angeles, we see predominantly white population. And for the purpose of the presentation, I'll be structuring the presentation based on our model. So this is what we saw as the catalyst in our area. In South Los Angeles, we see a 35% adult obesity rate and 29% childhood obesity rate. In West Los Angeles, we see a 10% adult obesity rate and 17% childhood obesity rate. Some more data about South LA mortality. The leading cause of death in South Los Angeles is coronary heart disease. The leading cause of premature death is homicide. And we see some age-adjusted death rates below. A little bit about the healthy food resource environment in South Los Angeles. We see that 5 times as many South LA shoppers travel at least 20 minutes to the nearest grocery store, and that's compared to 3% of West LA shoppers. In South Los Angeles, 25.9% of the population does not have access to private means of travel. We see also a high density of fast food and unhealthy uses. 60% of South LA restaurants are fast food restaurants, and the difference in density between South LA and West LA is on the slide as well. For the safe physical activity resource disparity, there are significant disparities that exist. I'd like to call your attention to the acres of green space per 1,000 people. In South LA, it's 1.2 acres for every 1,000 people. In West Los Angeles, it's 97.2 acres per 1,000 people. LA countywide, it's about 75 acres per 1,000 people. Just to put that in context, the California State Prisons requires that all prison facilities must have 10 acres of open space per 1,000 population, just to contextualize it a little more. And we also see the difference of countywide bicycle lanes. So from there, we worked building on a multi-sectoral coalition. The grant that covered this project period was a CPPW grant that was sub-granted to us from the LA County Department of Public Health. We partnered with the Department of City Planning to engage communities around 10 transit stations throughout South LA. And the goal was to forge a non-traditional partnership in building a policy change model and also to increase the built environment, increase multimodal access points for physical activity. For this, we also leveraged our consortium, the African Americans Building a Legacy of Health Consortium, which is made up of 3 coalitions, including the Coalition for an Active South LA that looks at physical activity disparities, the Food Policy Roundtable that looks at healthy food retail environments and recently worked on a fast food moratorium in the South Los Angeles area, and also the Freshworks Coalition that works to increase the number of healthy food grocery stores in the area. So a little bit about the specific project, Project Renew TOD. It was a 2-year community planning process from 2009 to 2011. It was an infrastructure and development needs assessment, and our role in it was to develop the outreach plan, undertake the outreach plan, and to develop the materials, the messaging, and build coalitions around the different stations. Some of the policy and planning objectives that we created with our friends in planning and at public health was to incorporate health into local government planning, including the general plan, redevelopment, and transportation planning land use documents. We also wanted to create access to safe places for physical activity, use policy instruments to improve walkability, promotion, and accessibility of physical activity options, encourage MMLOS access, and support the diversity of food resources in the South LA community. So there are a lot of physical challenges that we had to address throughout this project period. South Los Angeles is a very automobile-centric designed area. We see that well-established neighborhoods are throughout the area. Unfriendly pedestrian environments from a design perspective, but also from a public safety perspective. We see conflicting uses where residential zones are right next to commercial and industrial zones. And the actual station design of the 10 stations was a challenge. Some systemic challenges within the planning frameworks is that the multitude of agencies that oversee planning and transportation, as I think we heard from a previous presentation, the City of Los Angeles, so Department of City Planning, Department of Public Works, Department of Water and Power, the County of Los Angeles, which would cover the unincorporated areas not affiliated with the City of Los Angeles, and LA County Metro, which is the Transportation Authority. Obviously, fiscal constraints goes without being said. The community dynamics, There's a long history of mistrust between the local government and the South LA community, and also the changing demographics in the area. Community assessment. So we undertook a process of three different community assessment meetings or venues to undertake this project. We facilitated community input from pedestrian and bicycle audits and community visioning workshops, and developed with our consortium and city planning draft concepts for the community to review and to prioritize. Our community engagement strategy was multi-pronged. We had a grasstops outreach strategy where we focused on community-based organizations that have a legacy and a history in these local communities. South LA is a very large area, so we relied on our partner organizations and partner community-based organizations to do the majority of outreach, engagement, and messaging. We worked with local elected officials to make connections with these community-based organizations or local groups, church groups, senior centers. We also worked within city resources, so constituent centers, senior centers, and parks and rec. Our grassroots outreach plan was focused on activity centers, schools, youth centers, transit stations were a great place to do outreach, obviously, and residents. I believe we did a lot of mailing in the area. I believe we mailed every resident within a mile and a half of each station, and all the public agencies within the city and the county. Our first activity was a bike and pedestrian audit, and we partnered with the Prevention Institute to do walkability audits in the area. The audits were interactive. It was a walking tour followed by a mapping exercise, and they were practical and results-oriented. But more importantly, it was a chance for city planners to sit down and listen to the community and hear some of the concerns. Just an anecdote shortly. One thing that sticks out from my mind from one of these meetings was a resident calling for speed bumps in her neighborhood. And I think city planners approach that as slowing traffic or slowing, making the environment more conducive to children. But the reason she wanted speed bumps is so if there was a drive-by, the car going away would have to travel slower and there would be a better chance to get them. So it really challenged city planners to approach this differently and really think about some things they hadn't thought before. Just some pictures from the walk audit. You'll see the map that was created around each station and the different families that came. After that, we had community vision meetings. We had extensive grassroots outreach, obviously bilingual mailings to activity centers, residents, once again, to transit users. And the agenda of these meetings were largely to get feedback from residents about what they saw in the pedestrian walk audits, but also to introduce some potential planning concepts that could be used and urban planning tools that could address some of the nuisance uses they found in their communities or things that they wanted to highlight. And some more pictures. And along the way, we saw community stakeholders really get invested in this. We saw leaders like the resident on the bottom right became very vocal advocates for improvements to the station areas and to transit-oriented design. Obviously, there were a lot of concerns about transit-oriented design, including affordable housing, density, setbacks, and what this would mean for the historical nature of the neighborhoods. Finally, we had what we heard workshops, and this is really where the policy and resources were developed. This on the right was one of our outreach tools. Every neighborhood has a future. What does the future of yours look like? And this was a chance for city planners to present what they heard over the past two workshops and basically to create a menu of options which residents could prioritize and pick what would work for them. It focused on incentives for new development and how to address nuisance uses like pawn shops, fast food, check cashing, and the like. This was also a chance to build community support for a policy that would be presented to the City Council in the following months. It was a chance to foster leadership about built environment and health in South Los Angeles. There's also a chance to diffuse knowledge about some of the glaring disparities that we see in the community. This was a workshop in Watts, and over the course of three of the policy workshops, we saw about 175 residents turn out and really talk about some concrete planning tools, floor area ratios, setbacks, and it was fantastic to see. So after the city planning staff collected this feedback, the community offered their vision for the community, and the African Americans Building a Legacy of Health Consortium acted as a steering committee. A policy document was created, a policy study. I'll just run through some of the goals because I think I'm a little bit limited on time. And if any of these are of interest, we can talk about it in the question and answer period. So goal one, create safe transit neighborhoods that have daytime and nighttime commercial activity. An example policy objective was to use land use restrictions to limit activities that do not support pedestrian activity. Improve walkability near transit stations by enhancing pedestrian environments. Incorporate incentives into TOD overlay zones that encourage streetscape improvements. Complement the existing character of transit neighborhoods while maximizing the housing and retail potential of nearby stations. Incorporate incentives within TOD overlay zones that reward more transformative development projects. Use health, recreation, and retail amenities to improve local quality of life in transit neighborhoods. So how can we create transit-oriented parks? How can we create transit-oriented grocery stores? How can this be a driver for development in underdeveloped communities? Promote environmental sustainability through multimodal transportation and resource-efficient design. Incorporate incentives into TOD overlay zones that encourage bicycle infrastructure. Create mixed-income communities as an alternative to displacement. I think this is the million-dollar question in the TOD world. How can we create transit-oriented districts without displacing populations? I think this is a question that continues and that we will continue to grapple with. But I believe this is a good start. Streamline the environmental review process, namely CEQA, for development projects near transit stations that meet basic design standards. So how can we facilitate the rapid growth of bike lanes, facilitate the rapid growth of parks? And the policy and the policy implementation would take place at the community plan implementation overlay, which is a component of a community plan. And these are currently rolling out in South Los Angeles currently. There are three areas that are seeing these CPIO areas. And hopefully this will be used to inform the greater Los Angeles TOD policy and incorporate some of these policy ideas into all of their frameworks. This was a summary of the bonuses for developers, and these numbers were reached by the community and picked by the community. So it's talking about kind of the stick and carrot approach of how we can encourage healthy development, like street furniture, grocery stores, childcare facilities, and public parks. This is an example of one of the station maps that was created and some of the existing and future uses. Some of the lessons learned, I think it can be summed up by the prefix multi. Multi-agency, multi-level, so all levels of the community, grass tops and grassroots, obviously multilingual. And also how to message a healthy community as a concept and make that a comprehensive package, so it's not one single element for implementation, but that this is a comprehensive design package. And also reflecting on some of the critical community dynamics when doing outreach and policy development, so incorporating the history of the community, the values of the community, and respect for the community and respect for city departments that are working very progressively with communities. And hopefully we got to some of our outcomes in this project. Thank you.
Okay. talking, I'd like to thank our speakers. They gave us, I think, very interesting and insightful presentations on the role of mass transit, on complete streets, on the promotion of physically active communities and improving population health, and I think they really underscored the importance of health in all policies. I'd like to open it up now for questions for our presenters, and I'll ask each presenter to come to the microphone as their presentation is addressed. Yes.
I thought I heard you mention nutrition.
Yes.
At the beginning, but I didn't see much else about it. What areas did I miss, I guess, about the nutrition?
In terms of access or nutrition?
Yeah, one of the things that I'm concerned with is, you have communities where people can't even buy healthy food. It's always fast food.
Right. Let me skip back to the slide. So in terms of grocery store access, South LA is a food desert and food swamp community. We see many of the old grocery stores, especially after the 1992 riots, being converted into Walgreens or Rite Aids and limiting the availability of food. Does that answer your question? Or? Over time, yeah.
Well, I did notice the Walgreens here. It surprised me in San Francisco that the Walgreens had a bunch of fresh vegetables and things that were just down the block here from our center.
Right, and that's something. It's happening in South Los Angeles, and that's something that we're looking in terms of how much of the square footage of the store is being devoted to produce and fruits and vegetables. We see that stores like Target and Walmart are downsizing their square footage to focus on these quick serve options.
And then a related question, I guess not only in your presentation, but in the other presentations, quality of life was mentioned, but I don't see much as far as measuring the quality of life, where people are now, some kind of base, and then seeing if you see change over time. Do you have something that approximates that, or do the other folks have that too?
Not to my knowledge. Quality of life is something that in our existing county data collection tools, I do not think is available, but perhaps for the other presenters.
Do you have a question on buses? You talked about physical activity. So what we are looking at is increased physical activity and then healthy eating. We have some questions on that, but not as quality of life. So bring down BMI in that.
And so you have a baseline and you're thinking
yes,
about
now we have a baseline. So we are doing the current one is the follow-up of 2 years, yes.
Question,
to both of you who have worked on the CPPW grant, you really did not mention the cost of the intervention. This is a very serious matter.
Yes.
We in Douglas County in Omaha, Nebraska, were also the fortunate recipients of CPPW funds. And now are scrambling with the perspective of sustainability. So that's the first question to both of you. What are your plans for sustainability of this activity? And the other, to the Detroit group, thank you for a very interesting presentation. You didn't mention the issue of crime and safety in terms of its impact on mobility and physical exercise in high-density populations. And I was wondering whether this was a factor that you controlled.
In terms of sustainability, we feel like our consortium of coalitions will really carry the torch on many of these issues. We feel like throughout this process, there's a diffusion of capacity and a diffusion of knowledge to carry on these concepts in the future. In terms of a funding perspective, our organization will be working with REACH in the future and also CTG.
I'm asking specifically how much money was spent. That
I'm not familiar exactly with the budget.
Okay, my boss is here. I can ask. But I think it's around $200,000 that we paid planning department who worked on this policy. But then they had other people like Public Works and Parks and Rec. Many of the other city departments, they worked with them. But the cost to CPPW was something around $200,000. But I can correct the figure, but I don't have the figures in my mind. And our total grant to San Antonio was $15.6 million from the ARA grant that we received. And a portion of that was spent with the department to create the complete use policy. But now that the policy is in place, like MPO and other Office of Sustainability, many of the other partners are taking it on. So they will continue to do the work, which will, and the SA 2020, that again our mayor is involved in that. So we've got many people who are interested parties who will be carrying on that. So we spent our money only to get the policy in place, and we worked with one department of the city.
So in some of the work that we've looked at, we have examined the role of crime and safety and how it can contribute to physical activity or deter physical activity behavior. But we're also doing it in this joint sort of framework that we presented here. And what we're finding is that there are interesting relationships between physical activity and crime because we are unsure of exactly why people are being physically active. So if it's being physically active for having to go to work or having to shop because you don't have a car, that may be a very different situation in a high density, low income, high crime neighborhood than, say, in a low density neighborhood where you may be physically active because you have the ability to, not because it's a requirement. So there are very intricate, complicated relationships between poverty, crime, safety, and car ownership, home ownership, those sorts of factors that we've yet to fully disentangle, but we are definitely working on it.
It's a great and very difficult question. I think Ciclovia is a great example in terms of a programmatic way to encourage open streets and safe streets. From a policy perspective, I think we need to look at the built environment comprehensively, and so maybe it's not things that just happen on the roadway, but is it the vacant lot next to the roadway, and is there a way to make that green and more accessible or more programmed?
One more thing I can just add. In San Antonio, we have done walking trails in four of the SAHA communities, that is Housing Authority, where there's low-income groups. So out of the 60 of them, we have done in four of them. So that will be kind of right inside the properties where people can get access to any time of the day. It also has very simple fitness stations. So that we have been able to do with the CPW grant in four of them. And one more thing that we are right now still continuing is the Right to Own program, where we are giving out 1,000 bikes to the SAHA residents. They have to attend the bike safety class, bike maintenance class, and one more session they have to do with the leader. Then they are given a bike, and we are just doing the evaluation. So we are giving out 1,000 bikes in 13 locations in SAHA, and four walking trails and fitness stations. So it's kind of a safe, their own neighborhood, they are able to engage in using that.
May I also add what we're doing a little bit more in Michigan? I've worked with Vicky. Some of the work that we've also done is not only with driver's education, but also bicycle education to make sure that the bicyclists are going along with traffic, and then also educating the drivers as well. So when you get your What Every Driver Must Know booklet, there's new sections in there educating drivers about what these new halt displays are with the pedestrian crossing, what bike lanes, how you're supposed to make the correct way to make a right turn onto roads as well. So we've been doing bicycle and driver education.
That question is for Dr. Stinson. Put you on the spot. So I found your presentation very interesting. I'm a Washington, D.C. resident, which obviously has a great public transportation system, but I've lived there for 7 years, and I found that the quality of transportation has definitely gone down. Not as reliable, constant track work, that type of stuff. And for me, I don't have a car, so it's really my only option, but I've been finding that I'm more prone to getting a ride with a friend or taking a taxi if I need to get somewhere in a certain amount of time. So has there been any research on the quality of the actual systems and how that influences the use and in turn, I guess, the accident rate for cars?
Yeah, I don't think it's very extensive literature, and that's one of the things that they talked about in that documentary, the history of transportation, is that the mechanism that they used to get rid of public transportation in the 1940s and 50s was to progressively make it really unattractive, cut down the schedule, not upkeep maintenance, and so people gradually just felt like it wasn't really attractive, and then they provided buses and other and taxis and other options for people to transition into that environment. So that, you know, it's very concerning, and that's why this is so important to keep the rigor of the analysis and the advocacy up for the investment in these systems, I think.
Right, and that's something that I would imagine too. In addition to this data, there is different data about parks within 10-minute walking distance, and I think that's where you will see the significant disparity. In terms of this, I believe it may be talking about schools or joint use facilities, and that might be affecting the South LA data, perhaps. Right. Well, I think you can't really do the stick unless you have a carrot in place, and so there has to be other options available, otherwise it's just punitive. And our world, our environment, isn't really set up to just implement purely punitive policies without making other options available. But these other transit options actually improve life for seniors because these are options. There's the current research about their inability to get driver's licenses as they get older, as they have more chronic conditions and eyesight and other problems, so that this mode of transportation is being removed from them anyway, and then they don't have any other option. And so these transit options of rail or denser communities, it's also about planning denser communities so that things are closer together, are really important part of this mix. But they have to be paired together, because if you just provide a wonderful mass transit system and then don't do anything about making driving less attractive or more expensive, people will be less motivated to take advantage of it. So it's really more ideal for it to be kind of part of a comprehensive strategy.
Yeah. Is on the way to implement it 100 domains of protected bike. And you talk a lot about ramping up the bicycle lanes there in South LA. So the notion of if you build it, they will come thing, what does the community say about putting those bike lanes in, and are they going to be used, and do they know, are there encouragement? I know you talk about education, but in the school system, is there something that is happening there so they are going to use the bicycle and
right.
have a bike?
Great question. And before I address that, that should say LA County, the far right column, not disparity. In terms of using the bike lanes in the existing infrastructure, we see that nearly 80% of children either ride their bike, walk, or skateboard to school. So the demand is definitely there. It's more about the access. Curb protected lanes are something we would love to have. But right now, when we're trying to scale up, I think the focus has been on Cheros and paint.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I noticed about the LA development pattern is we have a lot of strip development, but every little parcel has its own parking lot. Was there discussion of shared parking as a way to reduce the aggregate number of parking spaces in the area covered by parking to encourage density by more efficient use of that asphalt?
Definitely, and I think that's something that the state is trying to address and the City Council is addressing currently when we talk about parking minimums and how we can reduce the amount of that so you don't need all of that pavement dedicated to an automobile use, so we can get more storefronts right on the sidewalk.
Are there other questions?
This question is actually for Jim and more discussion about the policy options. I was curious if you know or if you have thought about how particularly some of those state policy options can be a way to implement those kinds of policy options that wouldn't enhance the existing disparities so that people who already have problems getting around or have to commute large distances because they can't live where they work or live where they work is very expensive.
Yeah. Well, I think it starts with one of my first slide from the APHA document, which says that our policy decisions, starting at a federal level in terms of how we invest the dollars, trickles down into how we design our communities and our zoning laws and how we that's, I think it needs to start there. In the most recent federal transportation bill, this is why this is so important. It did nothing to address that. It really exacerbated this problem. And this started with the 1950s National Highway Bill. So we need communities that are denser, but denser in a mixed-use kind of way. So it starts with zoning laws. It starts with how we decide what we're going to subsidize or what we're going to put our resources toward, private modes of transportation or public modes of transportation. And so I think that's the first part of it, because that involves a whole comprehensive linear progression toward policies that will enable mixed modes of transportation and not exacerbate disparities, I think.
So in terms of echoing what he just said, one key piece that we're learning in our work now is that it's not just density that matters, but the land use piece, the mixed land use piece is certainly an important thing to contribute or to think about when we talk about physical activity or any sorts of activities where we're trying to encourage people to use mass transit or community resources to improve their health behavior. So what we've seen in our findings is that in dense areas, it's also important to have a lot of resources. They have to have stores to go to. They have to have places that they want to visit in order for it to make a difference. So definitely something to think about in our policies.
I'm curious if people from their communities, what experience they've had with mixed-use zoning, how receptive their communities have been to mixed-use zoning. Do you know what I'm talking
about?
I'm curious as to your experience in your communities with mixed-use zoning.
Some of the work that's being done in Detroit, especially along the Woodward Corridor, as more organizations are coming in, for instance, there's a Whole Foods that's moving into downtown Detroit. And a lot of people that live in the city of Detroit can't afford to go to a Whole Foods. So it goes back to some of the things that Mark was talking about, the distrust, and, well, why is this coming into our neighborhood if it seems like we can't afford it, and who is it for? So I think that's some of the the problem that we've had in the city of the mistrust and also the mixed use and making sure that it's equitable for all residents.
Anyone else? Okay. Well, before I close, I want to just give you an announcement from the Community Health Planning and Policy Development section. They'd like to remind you that San Francisco is a great walking city, which is certainly important given our presentations, and to stop by the booth, the CHPPD booth in the exhibit hall, to learn more about community health planning and policy development and to pick up a free pedometer. So I want to thank all our presenters again, and thank you all for attending this session.